Thank you, Nancy. And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Karen G. from Los Angeles, West Los Angeles.
No, that's fine, honey. Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that does not make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new here tonight, I want to welcome you to AA. And I always call it God's magnificent AA, the program that saved my life and it's going to save yours too, if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy. Everybody else is doing around here. And you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 25 years. And people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job in mind and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Terry for inviting me to come down tonight. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows I make an awful lot of mistakes and an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, I've been talking to you an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one thing is talk to my sponsor. And Clancy sends you his love and best wishes tonight. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, and was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip. And I'm certainly not proud as I stand here tonight. And thank God for the old-timers in AA because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has been nothing but totally complete as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks. And I talked to him this morning. He said, almost every single day of my life. And he said, where are you going tonight? And I said, that new me down in San Diego. And he said, well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope. And tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe as I stand here and I welcome you and I hope that you stay. And then I think I do without a doubt the most important thing I can ever do. And that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life now, you guys. It not used to be that with me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell. I could not even describe it. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want it because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. If you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice. I don't really care about that, I want you to know. I'd lost my car. I'd lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever have with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought my knees in this disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. Absolutely devastated me, but not stopped me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it was read here tonight, that I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I'll be able to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about, Venus pursuit negates insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of pure insanity. I got sober almost into my coffin. And I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous as I stand here tonight. I cannot begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff. But, you know, like I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. I got my current sponsor. I had to change that date. And there's a reason for that. All these people had to go and smoke dope when I got sober. And you know, if you're smoking marijuana in this room now, you're not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I would tell you right this minute. I don't want to argue about it afterwards. Ask any old timer if you don't believe me. If I could change my date, then by God, so do you. But I got my current sponsor. I tried to explain to him that where I'm from in Nebraska, you can have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. He rather quickly pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We have one day here to get my day changed. And I was just smart aleck when I got my current sponsor. And I said, where does the book mention pot? He said, the book does mention pot. And I said, Clancy, I have read that book. So I talk about marijuana in that book. And he said, if I find there were pot in that book, will you change your sobriety and never argue with me again? And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot. I said, that is not what that means. He said, quite frankly, my dear, I don't care what it means. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date. And my life has flourished, I got to tell you guys. But I'm delighted to be here tonight, and I wish you much luck with your brand new meeting. It looks like it's going to be very, very successful and stuff. And I'm also delighted you don't have a glass for me. You can see your speaker. I had this terrible experience on the East Coast after giving a talk, and my talk, my skirt fell off in front of 3,000 people. And they had this glass for me. You could actually see the speaker, and that makes me nervous anyway. And I have this black suit on with this wraparound skirt, and the button came, and I thought, my God, my skirt's going to fall on the floor. And it was too late. It was on the floor. But you guys, you know what? That's like Thomas has taught me to wear underwear, and thank God I had some. It's also taught me to take action. I just picked up that skirt and kept right on talking. What else are you going to do? You guys, this has been without a doubt, the best 2.5 years of my sobriety, and I want to share that with you tonight. You know, if you could have asked me a year ago, New Year's Eve, are your men's made in Alcoholics Anonymous? I would have said, yes, that's been the absolute truth to me. I'm $86,000 out of debt here. I owe nobody nothing, no verbal men's, no financial men's. I'm home free here. Just have a sponsor, have a God in my life, go to meetings, work with others. There are 3,000 things we do to stay sober. Looks like I'm going to be okay and stuff. And our book says that more will be revealed, folks. And I flew to Kansas City, Missouri a year ago on New Year's Eve to give an AA talk, and this big dinner, dance, banquet, so they invited me to come. So air traffic control had held us over to Kansas City, or Kansas City, Missouri, and so we were circling the city, and I looked out the airplane window, and I spied the Hyatt Regency Hotel. I thought, oh my God, there's the Hyatt. I mean, this is what I'd done about 35 years ago. You know, I read my inventory to my sponsor. I'd not mentioned this for whatever reason. I'd done so much of this sort of thing, it was no big deal, I guess, but I didn't really remember when I did the inventory. Now I got to tell my sponsor. I called him, and he said, well, get over and make amends for you. Probably the place a bad name. But 35 years ago on Easter morning, I found myself in the Hyatt Regency Hotel glass elevator in Kansas City, Missouri, stark naked. Now, on the first floor of the hotel, and here was this family sending their Easter clothes. I'll never forget the look on these people's faces as long as I live. And I thought, well, if I have time, I'll get that done. I'd not have time to get that done. That committee kept me really, really busy and stuff. I was going to be there for 24 hours. So I went back to Los Angeles on New Year's Day to come back to L.A., and my flight was canceled. I thought, great, I got 5 hours to kill, take a shuttle to the Hyatt and try to find somebody to talk to, although I definitely find anybody on New Year's Day to talk to. And boy, was I wrong about that, let me tell you. I said, the manager of the Hyatt Regency Hotel, and I told him what I'd done, and he laughed. He said, Karen, stop, I have to tell you a funny story. He said, 35 years ago, my dad was manager of the Hyatt at that time, and we were over here having Easter brunch. He said, I was only 7 years old, I'll never forget this as long as I live. He said, you have to take the glass elevator upstairs to the brunch area, and the door opened up, and a naked woman got off. And he said, I'd never seen a naked woman before. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I had to be your first one, but take her being different. And he said, and guess what? Mom and Dad are here this week. And I thought, oh, wonderful. Yeah. He said, yeah, they're celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. I put them in the honeymoon suite. Let's have them come down and meet you. And I thought, let's not, you know. But I didn't say that. We just go along with them is what we do. And I said, whatever you want to do will be fine with me. And so Mom and Dad came down. I thought, my God, they're probably 150 years old. And walkers will have a heart attack when they find out who I am. And boy, was I wrong about that. I saw the loveliest people I've ever met before in my life. And they laughed. They said, Karen, we talked about you for years in the bars of the Hyatt Regency. And I thought, yeah, I bet you did too. And I said, I'm so sorry I embarrassed you and your family here all those years ago. What can I you to make that right? And they said, just don't ever do it again. I said, you know what? I can't think of any more disgusting than a 60-year-old woman getting out of a glass elevator stark naked. I'd mention we're taking that path anytime soon. So as I stand here tonight, my amends are made in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it ain't midnight yet, folks. You never know what's going to happen around here. A year ago in May, I was over in Lawson, Nevada. I spoke at the Tri-State Roundup. You guys haven't experienced that conference. My God, it's a fabulous event. They get about 6,000, 7,000 people to sing. And we were hanging around the casino on Thursday night waiting for the meeting to start, and I hit a $10,000 slot is what happened. And I was to experience every promise in the biblical of Alcoholics Anonymous in about 5 seconds flat. I was to know a new freedom and new happiness, and fear of financial insecurity left me temporarily. If you're new here tonight, that has not how you get the promises not like signs, but I swear to God, I got them on. It was really a great thing. Don Lawson owns that hotel, that Riverside Hotel, so he came down to tell me hi. Actually, they want their money back is what they want. He said, can we extend your stay? And I said, no check, please. I'm taking it back to L.A. And he said, what are you doing here this weekend? I said, well, actually, I'm speaking at the convention. He said, oh, can I come hear you talk? I'd love to hear the A speakers talk. And I thought, whatever you want. want to do. It's your hotel. I guess you can do whatever you want to. And my guy was in line the very next night, and they never give up, folks. And he said to me, are you sure we can't extend your stay? And I said, I'm positive. So I'm happy to report here tonight. I brought that 10 grand back to Los Angeles. I paid my car off with it, and I am truly debt-free in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a great position to be in, let me tell you guys. No, listen, I'm not a martyr up here. I didn't want to pay any of it back to you on the street. But, you know, it took me 18 years to do that. It's like paying for dead horses everywhere. But let me tell you something, folks. I am so glad I paid that money back. Everything I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned in retrospect. While I'm doing it, I don't see the value. It's afterwards I see the value. So, anyway, I'm glad it's over for me and stuff. But I don't wish to get in credit card debt again, I can tell you right this minute. But so it's been a great couple, 2.5, 3 years of my sobriety. And, you know, I come from a wonderful home there in Nebraska. And I want you to know that. And my mother wants you to know it, too. I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 13 years ago. And, God, I miss her so much, I can't begin to tell you guys. And, well, you only get one, folks. And when they're gone, they're gone. And I made amends to her many, many years ago. We had a wonderful relationship last few years of her life and stuff. But I just miss her terribly. And I can tell you guys a funny story. Not that my mom died, of course. I was back in Nebraska in August. Last August to visit my kids and my grandkids and stuff. And I told my eldest son, I'm going to go out to Grandma's grave and put some flowers down. I said, where is your other grandmother buried? I was not there for my ex-mother-in-law's funeral. And he said, well, Mom, just mark off 15 rows from Grandma's grave. There's Grandma's Lynn's grave. It's a little bitty tiny graveyard. It was overcast in Nebraska. It had been raining all day. And I told my speaker at their lawn club at 5:30. It was already 10 after 5. I really need to move right along here. So I put the flowers on my mom's grave and marked off 15 rows. There was my ex-mother-in-law's grave. I put the flowers down, and I backed up, and I found myself in an 8-foot grave, you guys, and I could not get out of that damn thing. I thought, how in the hell did this happen to me? Well, apparently the grave diggers in Nebraska opened the grave the day before, and they put a tarp up and a caution sign thing to hold the casket. It's basically impossible to fall in a grave. And they thought, well, it's been raining all day. Nobody's even out here. Let's go to dinner, and we'll come back and do it later. And I come sauntering over. And I thought, how am I going to get out of this thing? I was more worried about that than anything else, and there was nobody out there but me, you guys. What do? You start screaming, help is what you're doing. About 10 minutes later, this old lady walked over the grave. She's old, but I'm not, right? And she says to me, I don't think you're supposed to be in there. And I thought, stupid woman. I didn't say that, however. I needed that one in my pocket that particular time. And I said, have you got a cell phone you by any chance? She says, you know, I don't. And I said, can you go up to the office and see if anybody's still there? You know, get a ladder, call the fire department. What they got to do to get me out of here? They tell them not to run the sirens. It's not an emergency or anything. And here they come, you guys, six Lincoln, Nebraska fire trucks with their sirens going, six Nebraska police cars with their sirens going, and reporters of all damn things. And I said, don't you dare put my name in the paper. And they said, we have to report the fire call. We don't put your name in the paper. And I said, you better see that you don't. There it was Monday morning, Lincoln Journal and Star, California woman falls in an 8-foot grave. Karen, I can't believe they did that, but you never know what's going to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'll have you, all you old-timers know that I made it to my meeting at 5:29 p.m. I was there. And the people said to me, Karen, why do you have mud all over your dress? I said, you don't even want to know, trust me. But I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people who stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether he was found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. So one more time tonight, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up, but this is serious business. And I would give any world if my father were alive tonight, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen, cheerleading, all that kind of stuff, and made straight A's, never cracked a book, and I made straight F's, never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and now she's retired and teaches school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love my sister very much tonight. And I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I used to know that. I have a brother who was a fighter pilot in the Navy for many, many years. My brother retired 6 years ago in August and did 9/11 Iraq and so forth. He's been called back in the service. And, you know, my brother is really old to be a fighter pilot, you guys. He's 54 years old. And we were growing up, I thought he was such a dork, I can't begin to tell you. Straight as an arrow, Mike, doesn't drink, doesn't use drugs, doesn't screw around. He was an embarrassment to me, if you want to know the truth. And tonight, I'm so proud of that man, I cannot begin to tell you. He wouldn't catch me over Iraq in any fighter plane. And I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, you know the truth. They're high successful people, and they bore me to tears. I love them, but they bore me to tears. And I have a couple kids that are 44 and 45 years old, and now I know I certainly don't old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, you know the truth, but those couple of jerks give me five of the most gorgeous grandbabies you've ever seen before in your life, and those grandbabies have never seen their grandmother drink, and I hope to God they never do. So things in my family are very, very good tonight. It's only a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen. And in my case, that's a good thing. But, you know, I grew up in Nebraska. I was a disruptive jerk when I was growing up, always in trouble, getting kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I really hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys, but I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. Remember what alcohol did to me from the very beginning? It made me feel like I belonged. I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in need of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and I honor this podium by talking about alcoholism. I used a lot of drugs too, make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and Bill Wilson's story, he talks about and the powerful influence of alcohol and sedation. He wound up on the rocks. That is precisely what happened to me, folks. But, you know, I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say that this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants falls what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name about it, and I love them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of here tonight. I can just feel it, you know. That's one thing, girls, I love about Southern California. It's got so many sick men, and I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. And, you know, you guys, I'm going to be 63 years old next week, and I have a boyfriend. You better believe I have a boyfriend. He lives in New York. I live in L.A., so we get along so well and stuff. So things haven't changed a whole lot for me in that arena, I'll tell you. But I have to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about 15 years ago giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, A, walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding, you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you. And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd flown to Nashville and asked you." You know, I hear some women get this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. Do all their drinking shoot through the keyhole of an eyedropper. I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share it with you in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room tonight, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of our book, it says, "Cling to the thought that in God's hands your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have." And it goes on to say, "Because you literally avert death and misery for others." And I think that's very, very true in my sobriety. So if I offend anybody here, I don't want to hear about it afterwards. But anyway, excuse me. I got pregnant when I was 16 years old and had to get married. And my dear girls, you had to get married. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about that. It's just what we did and stuff. And as it must be, I'm married, an alcoholic. He was 17. I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby. Nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quickly found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis. He's going to beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee one thing. If my dad would lay one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And some in that family had to get a job. And I ain't finished junior high yet, for God's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln. And the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I'd love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you tonight from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have one ounce of willpower when it comes to my disease. But when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I went to high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years. And I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs in this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here tonight and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they tell me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession. I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people I work with in ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you tonight is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank, and with alcoholics, and me do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a hell of an exciting nursing position. I drank, and with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard, and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high, and that'll do a lot for your security level. You're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're telling the gym away what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking about 5 seconds fast, you know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And I'm not talking about that piece of crap they had 10 years ago. I'm talking about the real Woodstock. And there will never be another one, trust me on that. The kids in the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I'm quite sure. And New York got when they're going to have this big event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you're not going to have this concert. Started hiring people from Nebraska. Thought be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first drunk to sign up this deal. And by 9 girls I went to join me, and they had about 80 doctors from New York, and they were at Woodstock. I never seen so much alcohol in the place in my entire life. You could have easily filled a vaginal problem whatsoever, and the drugs, it was like a candy store. And on that back of that lot of Woodstock, we had a semi, and that was our hospital park out there. And I don't recall being in that semi the entire week. But I do recall it was at the Stanford Station right there. Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe sang those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. Things have not changed in my life in a little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day to leave you on the truth. That's not true. That's a big fat lie. Do not tell him I said that, please. I was just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janis Joplins, but drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. If you'd lie to me, say anything but that. But I can't remember the fun, I remember the pain that it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful. Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot begin to tell you. And, you know, the drunk driving charges, the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need to get even with him for all the things he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand here tonight. You know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe this is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice. If you, I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. And he feels the same way I do, too, as a matter of fact. But I danced that man through 3 of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this strawberry, I tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from 8 podiums. I said, okay, fine, then I won't tell anymore. He said, no, go ahead and tell those people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I will kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I will never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied as we did. Came home drunk one night, and I happened to be sober this night for some reason, and I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home? They want to take you to bed. And it's one thing I can't stand is some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And I said, when the shoe's under the foot, though, I don't mind at all. But anyway. I said, get your hands off me and leave me alone. Don't you lay one more hand on me. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed, let me tell you. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, you know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, eyes wide open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis. And this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you, so I'm just going to tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But you know, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even this guy for all the things he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. And this is many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You know, in our country in the last year or so, there's been two or three instances of super glue stuff. I'm the original super glue person. Mrs. Bobbitt has nothing on me, I can assure you. But anyway, I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get off in 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get off in 5 minutes, is what it said. And I heard this guy, I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again. And I poured super glue all of this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place I didn't have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. And we had a telephone by our bed there, and our bed in there in Lincoln, he called the police, and the cops were out in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they did not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. And California would not surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which made the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And I stood there, and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for God's sake. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I know better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. One more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did, and they took me to jail, I might add, and it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper in about that at Creighton, and even if she's going to go to medical school, you can go read about it if you want to. But anyway, and I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too, I got to tell you. I'm sorry, but he would have. For those of you who don't know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 4 years ago. It was on the national news. And I was on the tin freeway. I had a wreck when I heard it. I thought, my God, better her than me, I got to tell you. But, you know, we have an amends step in this program. And my sponsor is going to get an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I'll have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get on the airplane, get there, and do what I'm asking you to do, and then one of these days you will be sorry. And I'm telling you, but in this room tonight, when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we're able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you, for the first time in my sobriety, the promise in the Biblical Alcoholics Anonymous came true in my life. And you also found about that? Motives mean nothing here, folks. My buddy sucked big time on that one. I still got the promise, so go figure. It's action A that counts around here, not motives and stuff. But anyway, I divorced this guy one more time, and I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for God's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me, which are typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse, and I've studied alcoholism. I knew all about before I became one. It shows me one more time tonight what our book says is so true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing of this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. We have one that's called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 25 years sober. And the day came to that hospital told me, Karen, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. You are absolutely pathetic. You're the finest nurse on this staff, and you know that you are. You have won awards for your nursing ability. What is the matter with you? You have a drinking problem. We're tired of reading about you in the paper. Drunk driving charges, bad checks, glue in husbands, all the crap that you're doing. Everything you do in Nebraska is in the paper, I'm sorry to say, and they knew my game. They said, you're going to a treatment center, you are out of here. We are not protecting you anymore. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of the job that I loved more than anything in the whole world, and I cannot say it enough tonight. And I drank and I drank and I died and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work in a nursing home there in Lincoln. What I'm going to share with you guys is something I'm not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years of my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself still on drugs from that nursing home. It's not because I like drugs. It has nothing to do with anything. I was physically addicted to alcohol by now. I had to have this stuff. I couldn't go more than 3 hours without drinking. I was having trouble withdrawal symptoms. I couldn't drink at work, so I started stealing narcotics. It's just that damn simple. And I hated myself so bad, I can't begin to tell you guys. And the day came to the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. They take good care of the patients. You're a great nurse, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange, too, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange, too. And I threw my keys at them, and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that ear, of the nursing physician, and I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining so little alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly, and I was in hot water to my yin-yang, let me tell you. The very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up, and that's why I'm an acronym of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the day came when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from the hospital, and this has got to be without a doubt the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they say, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again? Reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done too, as a matter of fact. And long story short here tonight, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story short and short here tonight, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska, what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I traveled the Midwest, I prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or doing. I'm still so sick in the head sometimes, I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I am still a very ill member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing in the streets of the practicing female alcoholic. Things happen to me I would not repeat from this podium tonight, but I'm sure that you have the general idea. And 2 years rolled by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly have better things intended for myself than to be doing that, let me tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live, and I hope to God it's the last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed down the streets is what happened. I woke up in an intensive care ward, the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital I worked at for 19 years, and I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds when I got sober, and I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs start going, and I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I shook, and I died, and I died for 35 days. And I'd scream at those nurses, demand they give me drugs to withdrawal. They would not give me one drug. They said, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You're not getting one drug from us, so quit asking us for them. You need to fill in those tremors, and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But those nurses got 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. And those people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. And I really fell in love with these people, and I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life that got sober. My family wanted absolutely nothing to do with me. They had all the crap they were going to take off me years before I quit drinking. And for the first time in a long time, people were talking to me again. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked in that official treatment from that hospital. I'm apprised of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys, let me tell you, and thank God I went to give. And you know, where I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize with an orange person, I can assure you. And they used to bring the patients over to the hospital and they'd say, look at her, see what's going to happen to you if you keep drinking? Look at her. I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that? But you know what? In retrospect tonight, I'm glad they did that. I can think about that before I could pick up any drink. But I was out of quit studying the inpatient 30-day program due to my very rotten behavior. I was in there for 7 long months. That's a long time to be an inpatient 30-day program. But I completed all that, and I found myself very, very active in Alcoholics Anonymous in Nebraska. I wasn't doing one thing that we teach people in AA to do it, and I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. You know, you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing one at the other. God love them, the old-timers and Alcoholics Anonymous. They literally saved my life, and boy, they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well, and I'll be internally grateful. But so a guy with 20 years of sobriety grabbed me at AA today. He said, come outside, I want to talk to you. You stay away from new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA that they don't read the book and they don't need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. He had this man speaker, and asked this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I hear all about Clancy, and I want nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. But I told this old-timer, I said, who do you think you are that you're going to tell me to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go this Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way. I did pay it back. I did. And I will tell you guys from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that man literally put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. He apparently does for me what I cannot do for myself. And I found myself walk across that convention floor, asking that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazy I never thought of being. And I thought to myself, what did he say that to me for? He didn't even know me. I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked me about me if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. He said, Karen, I have to sponsor people on a long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you. Don't do it for you. You'll probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day to tell you not to call me every day. You're going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. Become an active volunteer of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. Defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day of my recovery, really the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said 2 words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people, yes, sir. Trust me, I don't. One more time, God do what I can't do for myself. Respect's got to start for me somewhere. And I said, be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in the right way. I sponsored a lot of women in that town. I'm not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program, and every one of those women is still sober today, with the exception of one, and she died in a car accident when she was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I tried to tell this man, I cannot go with the kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get up to the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and tell those people you've been sober in A for a year and a half, you got the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this meeting tonight. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I asked for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawns, you know, the truth, and keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 20 years ago, this last April, when one more time I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And as a gift from AA, I don't deserve it, but I got intended to take it. And I came here to visit a couple times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. If you're new in this room tonight, I want you to know that you are in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. This is the best place to be and be sober. And I know that's very, very true because I get the honor of speaking all the world. And I welcome you and I hope you stay. And I took Clancy on the phone one day. I moved to LA. Living that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I took a glove, not been wrong about that either. Well, I'm the Pacific Group. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room to be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single of those things have come through for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I deserve none. By God, I'm taking all of them. You know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them nor our 12th tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may ever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And I'm going to say one thing more. I'm going to shut my mouth here right on time. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in San Diego, California tonight. And I think that, but to the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.